how CNN was presenting the whole thing from one side, and it was actually really kind of that's what opened my eyes, that it was, again, it was this propaganda.
Hello and welcome to Persona Non Filtered. Today I talk with Elena, who lives in Seattle and is one of the artists applied for the exhibition of Julian's Freedom is Your Freedom. Welcome, Elena.
Hello, thanks for having me. It's very good to be with you.
Yeah, I think it's very good to talk to you as well. So, Elena, do you like to tell me a little bit about yourself? I read about you that you are born in Macedonia and immigrated to the United States. Do you like to tell me a little bit about the story about you?
Yes, I grew up in Yugoslavia that now doesn't exist, and I immigrated to the States when I was 25. I went to college actually, to college in Belgrade. I studied computers, and then I immigrated to America when I was 25. And right after that, the war broke out, and all the mess happened in Yugoslavia, and which kind of really affected me. It was kind of a feeling that, you know, something, you felt like everything was sold to you, and everything you believed in was it fall and disappeared, and it was a lie, and it was a hard time. But I stay in America until now. I'm still here, and I keep on going back and forth with Macedonia, and also really affected me was the whole issue with the Macedonian independence and the name, and it was, I don't know, maybe my whole artistic expression is maybe a result of that, and I really try to express myself through maybe more through art, but also I write some short plays, and we show them here and there. Sometimes they get produced, and I end up writing haiku, and that's about it. My life is between family. I have two kids, and going to work. I'm still a software developer. Need to make money. Doing my art, trying to write, and going forward. Eventually, I really want to go back. Maybe stay longer in Macedonia, and you know, maybe live there longer, but see what happens.
So, what was then the reason? Because you just said you immigrated to America as you was 25, and after this, the war started in the former Yugoslavia. So, which was the reason for you to immigrate then to America?
I wanted to, first of all, it was obviously that Yugoslavia was going to fall apart. You know, I remember talking to a Bosnian guy from Serbia, and he said, well, it's okay, we're gonna separate, but as long as we don't kill each other, it will be great, which eventually happened. But first of all, I knew that there was no prospect much in Yugoslavia as Yugoslavia, and staying in Macedonia was just, Macedonia was a small country. After I graduated and I was software developer, I couldn't get a job for a year. So then I eventually got a job, and I remember I was paid just enough to go out at night, you know, and buy my drinks, you know. And I wasn't a drinker, but I was just, it wasn't, you know, the salaries was miserable, the economy was horrible. So that's what made me, you know, decide to go and try somewhere else, maybe get more opportunity. And also I was very adventuristic, and I thought, I mean, America for me then was kind of I didn't know much about what America was all about. I really believed it was more about blues and going and traveling to Hawaii and, you know, the music. And so, you know, I came to America and I've been here since, yeah.
Since a long time now, well.
Yeah, it has been over 30 years, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we share some history together. May I express this later a bit? But what you felt as you heard about the NATO attack on Belgrade?
Oh, that was horrible also. I mean, it was, you feel so violated. Even I was like so far away. We were living in LA then, and I was like watching CNN. My husband is American, and was glued to CNN, and I just had to sit there around and watch it. And you just, I don't know, when the places where you live, like I was studying in Belgrade, or when they're being bombed, and you recognize the places you walked, you know, and you know, sit on the benches with your boyfriends and stuff, and when they're being bombed, it's just like you feel so violated. It was just a horrible, horrible time. And I also remember how CNN was presenting the whole thing from one side, and it was actually really kind of, that's what opened my eyes, that it was, again, it was this propaganda which or one-sided presentation of the reality that was kind of even added to my feeling of being feeling violated. But those were scary times. Yeah,
I can feel this because I never was in Belgrade, but as I said, we share some history as far as Yugoslavia concerns, because my grandparents originally come from Vukovar, the Croatian part now, and it was always a big part of our family history that we couldn't go there because they was or had to leave Vukovar after the Second World War. And but you feel somehow your roots and where you are connected to, and then you see that something is going on there and you smell that it is wrong.
Yeah.
When I heard the stories from my grandmother, how, and as this guy expressed to you, you know, as long as we not kill each other. And this was never the issue, you know, and we know now because of Julian that the people was presented a lie and it was a propaganda shot in order to find a reason to bomb Belgrade and to create the story where we all now know the story wasn't true. You know, yeah. And when you know from your grandparents that there was actually, I mean, at least at the time, that a few people hate each other, you know, out of these different groups of people, and that they maybe are in many things on different opinions, this is maybe the truth, but it's not the majority of the people, because the majority of the people respect each other and don't want to fight or kill each other, as this guy expressed to you, you know. And I can understand that when you watch this then on CNN, because this propaganda they did with all these invasions taking place, and when you watch it, it's almost like they want to show you the newest Hollywood blockbuster with this, you know, and not that here are actually people killed in this moment.
Yeah. And it's just so bad when you, it's so, it creates so much damage when you represent the truth just from one side. And it's just so manipulative. And I really strongly believe that always in every conflict, you have to present both sides for whatever it is. You know, if you really want to, okay, if you wanna exploit that conflict and you wanna use it in your advantage, sure, you just present one side. But if you really want to resolve that conflict, you have to show both sides. And that's what has been really lacking. So now to go to Julian, I was just at that time, you know, I don't remember like how I learned about him and stuff, but at that time, there, I know that there were some cables coming out, especially about Macedonia. Some truth was coming out, and you know, WikiLeaks was this cool thing, and we were like, you know, and I started believing that finally, you know, maybe this technology will bring some truth out, and this technology will mean a democracy, will mean more justice, more democracy. And of course, Julian was that face of WikiLeaks, and that was just such one of my biggest hope after all these horrible things happened with Yugoslavia, and now this hope turned into such a big nightmare. And it's been, I don't know how many years, 15 years, I don't know, it's been forever, where, yeah, you know, where this guy has been kept and tortured, and the feeling, I keep on feeling oppressed. The whole thing about him oppresses me so much. When, I mean, you go around living your daily life knowing that somebody is being, like, you know, locked up forever based of nothing, you know, without any, you know, trial, without anything. And it's just a horrible thing that I just find it very hard to live it.
I agree with you on this, because it is everybody of us who raising the voice for Julian and for his freedom, and year by year by year is ticking by. And specifically now the last 3 years and all these court hearings, where every time you sit in front of your live stream, watching the live stream, waiting for his legal team, for Stella coming out of the hearing, and waiting for some good news. And you cannot believe what is going on there. And as you say, he was his biggest hope for our world, with delivering the truth, something we did know in our heart, like, you know, about your home country, about Yugoslavia. And as I know where my roots are from, one side of, from my dad's side, where his parents come from. And you know that the people live there, want to live in peace and want to live in freedom with each other and respect each other, even when the one or the other, let's say, have a fight over religious questions or whatsoever, but they wouldn't do these horrifying things to each other. This was provoked from the outside and from someone with this big interest, what are exactly the people who torture Julian now. And this is the oppression, as you describe it. It is really, really hard to deal with. And as the day is ticking by, I feel it's getting harder and harder. And the anger is rising.
Yeah. You know, like, this is what happens when you exploit the one side. Like, for example, in Yugoslavia is an example. You know, you exploit the... You kind of emphasize the hatred, but then you don't show the other part where there is no hatred and there is peace and there is support and love and interracial marriages, and you exploit one thing without bringing to light all the other things, and that's what happens, a horrible war. But what, you know, I don't know if you read the book The Bridge on Drina, but I think in that book was there was this thing where the Ottomans were building this bridge, and I guess they built in a woman in the bridge, you know, and, you know, eventually the woman is, you know, dies, or, you know, after a while being built in, they cannot move. Somehow when I think of Julian, I kind of feel like he's kind of building in this building and they don't let him move, and it just, you can't believe it that this could be happening now in the 21st century. So, but that's kind of the metaphor I always have in my, when I think of Julian, I think of, you know, the how the Ottomans would build in somebody into the building and don't let him, you know, kind of build in, no place to move, and it just, I don't know, it's this horrible thing.
So in your statement for the work you submitted for this exhibition, you said walking on a tightrope while being constantly watched is a life that awaits us the moment we allow to be silenced. So what is behind this statement for you and what you want to express with your artwork you submitted for the exhibition for Julian?
Well, this is the idea was in the fact that we, like we, the ordinary people, are, are going through our daily lives, you know, and daily struggles, and we're trying, and being, and by Julian, what's going on with Julian now? We are. It's metaphorically, Julian represents the what's going on with us, meaning not having a freedom to express ourselves, not having a freedom to say what we mean, not having actually mostly not having a freedom to search for the truth because it's so dangerous. For example, I'm thinking maybe in the whole thing when the cables were leaked and stuff, maybe there was some mistake there done, but isn't that part of searching for the truth, and shouldn't that be forgivable? So I have in the paintings us like going on a tightrope, human ordinary people trying to live their lives, but then they're being watched by the two falcons who kind of represent the people in power, and then there is this face of a man who for me that represents Julian, who is being above all, kind of in a way kind of watching what's going on with us too, you know. So that was the idea.
Okay. Yeah, but I think your statement is absolutely right, you know, and especially when we're looking into wars and what Julian said, if wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth. And I think this is the whole point of it, you know, knowing and understanding what is behind this, because it is we, the people, have to understand that someone tries to make up a story that we hate someone else and then praise the war. To use these words, I spoke this week before I recorded another podcast with another artist who will be in the show. She's has Japanese roots, and she told a story that her grandfather was an artist, and after the Second World War, while the Second World War, the Japanese government gave the artist, who was actually a soldier at the front, brushes and paint to paint pictures who praised the war. So putting out a lie when they saw firsthand what is going on there, you know. And this brings us to the important thing, what is so important for me about this exhibition and for Bea, the artist I curate this with, that we think that it is absolutely necessary that we need to raise our voice. And looking into your life story and what led you then into this artistic expression and everything you experienced in your life before this came out, because this is like, you know, you said that you are a computer programmer, right? Yeah. Or are you software programmer? And then on the other side, you have this, you have this very logic, I would assume, because I mean, you know, I couldn't be asked to program anything. And then you have this, on one hand, this very logical thinking and putting things together and connecting the dots, and then having this artistic expression on the other side. What was absolutely necessary for you to do, and then of course came along Julian, because of your what you experienced and when you saw how Belgrade was bombed. And I mean, I can't even imagine how you must have felt sitting in America and watching CNN and seeing these pictures.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's like your whole world is falling apart, and in those moments you do need the truth. You do search for some kind of a truth. You search for some kind of explanation. And to tell the truth, WikiLeaks was coming out with most explanation to me how this world works, how what's going on, how the, you know, how the governments work. So as I said, I mean, it gave me so much hope that this will help, the WikiLeaks will help in people understanding each other, people refusing to being manipulated, people refusing to just take one side, and people being more interested in looking deeper. And I just don't know what happened, you know. And I think that there is so much disconnect between the people in the world. I mean, like, I believe that people in Germany don't know what's going on with the people in Macedonia, for example, or in the States. There's this, and then, I mean, to include like you know, the Middle East, and the world is a big place, and I think the WikiLeaks was somehow connecting us all with indiscriminately publishing info about whatever country in the world it was. And yeah, it was a world that I would have, you know, and of course I agree, and I believe in state secrets and something unclassified documents. That's all I understand. That's part of for something the state needs to work with. But I think that there is, mistakes can be made, and I mean, they shouldn't be punished with, like, I don't know, 20 years of solitary. I mean, 20 years of being in prison without any kind of, you know, any kind of trial. But, and again, what is democracy? I mean, democracy is like going and, you know, when we go out and vote, we vote for the person that we want to govern us. But if we don't know anything about what's going on and what that person has done, how can you even participate in the democratic process, right?
Yeah.
So that's why we need some kind of truth. We needed something. And, you know, what is investigative journalism? I mean, that's what it is. And that has even now became so much more scarce and much more, you know, all the, you know, the news is covering this interest or that interest. So, again, it's not the world that I think anybody who likes democracy would like to live in.
Absolutely not. And you are right there. And I think also when we're looking into the information or the cables was leaked by WikiLeaks or published by WikiLeaks, these cables and the content of the cables is, to me, about public interest, because there is these, I mean, there are possibly things, you know, don't need to be expressed to everybody. This might be the case. I'm personally not sure about this, but there are these things we need to know. And when we need to know, for instance, when we're looking into the situation of Yugoslavia, that this was staged from the outside, what was going on there in tearing up this country into all these regions where people before was like, you know, had family connections. Even as you said this before, there was never shown the story that, you know, people, a Croatian man married a Serbian woman and the other way around. This was nothing they expressed, you know, and this was nothing they showed us. It was only like, you know, a Croatian man sees a Serbian man and, you know, the first thing is they take the guns out. This was the story how it was sold. When I know for sure that this is not the truth.
Yeah. I had a friend she was a Serbian, but she was in Bosnia, and she equally, I mean, I know, I totally, the Bosnian people, you know, went through horrible horror, and the horrible things happened to them. But also her, she was also like running away, and then I would call her. I was worried what's going on, and then she would say that they spent the night in the village in one house, like I don't know how many villagers, I don't know, in one house laying down with guns in their hands. And so you know, both sides, even in any conflict, you know, both sides, the ordinary people from both sides equally suffer. Not equally, let's not say equally, but they do suffer. They're suffering on both sides. And sometimes, you know, to stop wars and aggression, maybe it's good to know that even if you're, even if we are part of the state who is doing the aggression, we as a human will suffer, you know, everybody suffers. So, and that should be somehow shown and presented in somehow, and everybody should be aware of this, how horrible, I mean, war brings suffering on both sides.
Absolutely, yes. And I mean, it is what is always forgotten, or sometimes, you know, even the media forgets, that everybody is suffering from war. When we just see the situation we are in right now, and, you know, I go to the shop and I pay minimum 50% more than I did a few weeks ago,
yeah,
for a normal grocery shopping. And this is to some families a huge problem, because they can't even pay or have enough money anymore to pay for their food. When the people who actually arranging this war and who are doing all these kind of things, and, you know, who invade or whatsoever, when they don't suffer a single little bit, because they have all very comfortable houses, a very comfortable life, good filled bank accounts, and they don't need to worry about this, what, you know, the normal people have to face these days in wherever this is taking place, you know.
Yeah.
And many people losing everything, you know, you lose your house, you lose everything.
Yeah. Those are the people who are hanging on the tightrope in my painting. I mean,
yeah.
And who would think that this war in Ukraine, I am reliving everything, and who would think that this would have happened? And couldn't have this been stopped? I don't know how, but it's just horror after horror, and you know, it's. I don't know, and you know, okay, we don't have now WikiLeaks, and we don't have Julian to tell us what's going on. But is the world? I mean, look at the world. The world is a mess. And
But we actually still have WikiLeaks. I mean, you can go on the site and submit, you know, when you have stuff. But the point is that Julian is incarcerated, and therefore no whistleblower or journalist will pick this up, because they are obviously frightening ending up in the cell next to him. You know, this is what they play with him. Exactly. This is why he is in there, to send a warning sign that no one who has knowledge of the truth should reveal the truth, because when they do it, then there will be a cell next to Julian where they go in. So exactly. This is what they do, you know.
Yeah, but also WikiLeaks have been so demonized, like it was something so horrible, or it's something so horrible that I think less people, it's not that popular. I think less people are looking at it, because, you know, it was demonized so much, when, I mean, the whole intention was just peace and democracy and truth. And that's how democracy is presented to us. I mean, it's It's you again, you have to know the truth to make your choice, to pick who leads you. And why would somebody trying to present the truth be so demonized is the question, you know? It's double standard.
It is absolutely double standard. And it is like, you know, when this truth, whatever the truth is, would suit someone's personal political agenda in order, for instance, to become, you know, president wherever in the world, then the truth is good. But when the truth is playing against us, then the truth is bad. And this is like, you know, they can't stand it, and they don't want to have it, because everybody of them, and I truly believe that there is nearly no one, and I said this in this podcast with Rikard, to me, every politician who's not saying, end this and let Julian go home, has dirt on their hands, and they fear that all this dirt could come out, that the truth could come out about them, and they want to have him, in their point of view, safe and secure, locked up, that nothing is coming out. And this is what I'm a bit, you know, mad in the meantime after all my years fighting or so, but I think this is what it is. Because no, when go ahead. Because it's
no,
fun.
No, I was just thinking, actually, is it that though? Because, I mean, all kind of dirt comes out on the politicians and nothing is happening. They're just going happily with their daily lives and they're keeping. I kind of, even I don't think it's even fear. I think it's more like this kind of revenge, not revenge, but this kind of like, he's going to pay back, you know, like some kind of, I don't know what that word is, but it's, I don't think it's even fear. It's just this desire to make this guy pay back for whatever, I don't know what it is. And it's again, and also it is a fear that in the future, they cannot just do whatever that they want to without thinking, oh, wait, am I doing the right thing? But the point is, you shouldn't be afraid that what you're doing is going to be leaked. And that's why you shouldn't, and that's why consider whether you're doing the right thing. You know, doing the right thing is doing the right thing. So if you are like really thinking whether you're doing the right thing, you shouldn't be afraid that that will be leaked anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, you tell the truth, and the truth should never be punished. Yeah. You know, it is like, because what, I mean, Niels Melzer, who wrote this fantastic book about Julian's case, is UN, former UN special reporter on torture. And he stated in one of his speeches how far we have sunk when we punish the people who revealed the war crimes, who published the war crimes, and put them into prison, but we don't judge or sentence or put the real actual war criminals on trial. Because, I mean, the one situation is that the war was there. Then, of course, all these war crimes and these horrifying things came out. And these lies came out, what led into this wars. But then there is this war crimes. And wherever they're taking place and wherever are people suffering under crimes which even go against the, I mean, it is hard for me to speak this out, the war law, yeah? How you have to behave in within a war, and that you don't have to kill civilians and whatsoever. But I mean that we even have to talk about this, as you said before, in 2022, where we know from horrifying world wars what's going on and what's happened. And we still talk about war crimes, and we talk about young men and women going into war and fighting on a battlefield and killing each other, when they actually should sit in a pub together.
And you know, the world has been pretty ugly, you know, after Julian was locked first in the, I guess, in England, then went into the embassy.
Mm-hmm.
The world has been very, very ugly, actually. Lots of wars have happened from, you know, you know, Iraq and Syria, and you know, it's been horrible. And now we have this guy, this person that he has to pay for something, you know, when nobody has paid for anything, you know, you know, nobody who has initiated this wars or has lied or has created, I mean, these tragedies and having hundreds of thousands of people died. I mean, nobody has paid for any of that. And now we have this guy, this journalist who actually was against it and tried to prevent it. We have him locked up and he's going to pay for everything. It's just ridiculous.
It is. It is. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone with any brain, you know, must understand that this is wrong. This is absolutely wrong. There is, and this is so, as you said, you feel so oppressed over this time because it's going on. You try to find outlets. You try to find a way of express yourself, express this, make this public, make your point of view public. And how it is for you when you, are you in Seattle in a kind of an artist community, or are you more like you would say you're working for yourself?
Yeah, I try to connect with artists from here and there. We have these art walks. They do art walks where you go and like show your paintings into a business or in your cafe or into a store, and then people go and look at your art. So that's how there is this organization that kind of connects artists where we show our art. So it's both, but I kind of feel like I might be a little bit in a way I'm a little different, and I would like to connect more with like a foreign artist, which I don't have that here that much. But I did go I went to Dubai. There was some event called Art Connects Women, and we were all women from all over the world then there, like 2 years ago. That was very interesting. It was very interesting to connect with people from all over the world. Then I went to Qatar. There was another, like a world event of artists last year. That was also very interesting. So I kind of, even though you know, they say there are lots of immigrants in America, and I'm in kind of an area where I don't have that much contact with foreign artists. So I'm kind of trying maybe to find that. I miss that.
Yeah, I can understand this too. So, but the artists you connect with, did you, because we had here the situation, what actually was one of the, what initiated this exhibition then, as well as one of the energies pulled in there, was that we try to connect artists together, or we try to, let's say, get artists on their social media platforms doing something for Julian. And Bea and I received very bad response on this from artists. Like, we don't want to do it, we don't want to have anything to do it. They even asked us to stop because our posts would interfere with the aesthetic of their news stream. And I mean, these kind of things we heard, actually. What really turned me into like having a nearly a rage kind of energy, what then said, now we need to do something, now we need to go with this international exhibition, we need to show that we are artists all over the world actually doing something for Julian and want to do something for Julian. And this was, of course, concentrating the power here. This was what is behind this as well, and making a point that we are there. So did you connect it with artists as well who did something for Julian, or are you there like, you know, alone?
No, in your area. I don't know any artist that has I think more like I had, there are a couple of people, a couple of artists in Macedonia that, you know, kind of more mentioned that Julian than here. I think it's, people are very ignorant about it, and all they know is that, like, he's the bad guy, right?
Yeah. Okay.
He's a bad guy. He did something bad, and we got to stay out of it. And, I mean, people do art with different reasons. You know, selling your art is a big thing here. You know, it's people want to make some money, want to quit their jobs so they can do only art, you know. I wish I can connect with people who are more focused on their message, or focused on doing something for maybe trying to do an art that will send a message. And as I told you, I kind of saw more that kind of people more in the places I went outside of the States. So maybe I'm not in the right groups, you know. I should try to expand, you know. So, yeah.
No, I don't think, you know, that this is a reason, because I think what you describe, like people want to stay out of it, this is what we experienced too. I mean, this was kind of, yeah, we don't want to get connected to this issue. I mean, calling it issue is, of course, the first mistake. And they are also very much interested in selling their work and being able to sell it like everywhere, you know. And it's like they don't have this, maybe because I don't have a story behind it, but also it's sometimes lack of empathy in seeing this, because whatever you think about this situation, but in the end of the day, there is a man locked up in prison who has no conviction, who has no trial, who has nothing. And he is not guilty and sitting in solitary confinement. And this is absolutely not acceptable, whatever someone might think about the situation.
Absolutely. And, you know, we should, I mean, whatever you say about the world you live in, and that thing stays. And there is that's in my painting. That's why I have this face. It's above everything, and it's there because it's on everybody's mind. And I believe, even though many people don't want to talk about it, and they don't, it's just their way of dealing with it. I believe that everyone is bothered by that. It's just, you know, I know here people, lots of people were bothered about Guantanamo, about people being locked and never had a trial. I just read recently that somebody was released from Guantanamo after 20 years or something without a trial. And he was sent back, I don't know where it was. Was it Morocco or Tunis? I don't know. So he was sent back after 20 years. That person stayed locked up for 20 years. His whole life was taken away. I just personally cannot get in terms with such things. You know, I believe lots of people are bothered. And I know there was a reaction on that. And people would comment. But they kind of feel like, you know, maybe it's better to stay out. Or I don't know what is the situation. I think we don't know. I think there is some kind of lack of ideas how to, you know, organize, or how to express yourself, or I don't know.
Yes, I heard about this man was, I think it was just recently, who was released from Guantanamo, and
yeah,
I think he had to be released straight into a, yeah, into a kind of a facility to try to give him medical help and psychological help, because his psychological state is absolutely, it's gone, you know. And when we hear the stories, what was happening in Guantanamo and how people was treated there, I always ask myself, when I see this and when you see pictures on WikiLeaks from Guantanamo and stuff like this, what I ask myself is how another human being can do such horrifying things to another human being. You know, how is this possible? Yeah. I mean, when I would imagine that I would punch someone, drain someone with water, whatever they all, I mean, this is just the little thing of what came out, what is done to the people there. And I heard about another guy was in the, who released a book. He was, I think, for 9 years in Guantanamo. He was actually a guy from, lived in, is born in Germany, lived in Germany, but had roots, I think, in Palestine or something. And he went on a trip and to study the Quran for himself, not for any kind of bad things. He wanted to do it because he was about to marry a girl and he wanted to have the knowledge of his religion. And somehow, as he was on his way back to Germany, he was catched and ended up in Guantanamo. And he wrote actually a book about this and described very pictured what was done to him in these years. And how the political interest in this case, it was like, you know, one German Bundespräsident didn't want to get him back home because there was this rumor that he is maybe someone who could be a terrorist, but it was absolutely not the case, as it is proven now beyond any doubt. And then I think it was in the end, I guess it was Merkel or so who got him out and got him home, but not, you know, the first Germany didn't want to take him back, even he was born here. And, but it was such a, I heard about his story in a German podcast, and this was, you listen to this and you think like, hang on a minute, how a human being is able to even do it, you know, how you can torture another human in this way, physically, mentally, in whatever. It is to me not to explain what is going on in the head of someone who's doing this to someone else. I can't grab it, you know?
Yeah, and I, that's why I believe that every human being, wherever in the world, deep down feels very uncomfortable about what's happening with Julian Assange. I mean, he's been locked for how many years, and then he was in that embassy, and then he didn't see sun, and you know, and they're saying about his health, his mental state, destroyed. He's being destroyed day by day, minute by minute, year by year, you know. And it just, I believe that there isn't a human being who doesn't feel uncomfortable about it. You got to be a real sadist to feel comfortable, to not, you know, if you allow yourself to think about it, you're going to feel uncomfortable about that situation. I mean, there are these stories, there's always these stories about somebody being locked and Rapunzel and, you know, being locked in a dungeon is just so, so symbolic and so metaphorical, and like you lock in the truth. What are we locking actually? We humans. What are we trying to lock is the question, and I don't know.
Yeah,
and everything is repeating. I mean, those stories are repeating. That the prison trainer is repeating in my mind, you know, and we are locking something, and it's some kind of a truth, you know.
Yeah, and what you just said, I mean, actually, I think it is, he's in his 13th year of You know, when you count the years he was spending in the embassy and now the 3 years in Belmarsh prison. And I had, you just said, you know, he hasn't seen the sun. And I actually had this thought today. And I was thinking, so while I was outside in the sun, because in Leipzig was sunny, not gray today, yeah. That he couldn't have a walk for 13 years, like a normal walk, you know.
Imagine. Yeah.
When I go out and I just, you know, like when I say I go a little bit around the block, you know, and go a little bit like in, we have here close by a little park, and, you know, going in the little park, and he wasn't able to make this walk in a park. He was in a 50 square meters kind of rooms in this embassy. The only fresh air he had when he went out on the balcony.
Right.
And now he is in this hole there in this prison cell. And when you imagine what this does to your mindset, but I mean, as you said, everybody who thinks that this is right has a mental problem with himself, with them, you know, they need to ask themselves if, you know, everything is all right with their brain structure to say so. And I see this, and I'm not a friend of, of course, there are dangerous people where we need to ask ourselves how we deal with this, but then we talk about criminals, you know. But when I see sometimes who we lock up in prisons, it is very questionable.
Yeah. I remember his I mean, at some point, like, his mother was kind of leading this before Stella was revealed with the kids. And his mother was on Twitter. I was following her until I got out of Twitter. But I mean, it was just so heartbreaking. What is that mother going through? And her messages were heartbreaking. And I'm a mother, you know, I have a son. And I mean, having your son being locked like that, it just, I mean, there can be bigger horror than that. And why? I mean, why?
Yeah. He didn't commit a crime. Every crime they tried to put in on him, you know, from other sides is proven of being untrue and staged and made up. And it's like, and then you see him not only locked up, but turned into this, as you just said it, you know, the bad guy in some media outlets. What is not to understand.
And you know that even the biggest criminal are treated better. I mean, the criminal goes and has a trial and knows what's going to happen. I'll have to serve, and it knows, you know, there is some kind of closure. They're living this without any kind of closure, with us hoping and it has been 13 years, so it's done. I mean, even if there was time to be served, I mean, it has been 13 years. You know, like 13 years, as you said, without a walk.
And this, you don't understand why no one really saying like, we drop the charges right now, you know, it's done, you know, it's over, we see it, and this is what no one gets, you know.
Yeah, you know, we're going through a horrible time, you know, that all these issues happening, like we have like ecological issues, there is a war, Syria is still in a war, Ukraine is a war. And, you know, those are big problems that are very hard to solve. But there is one little thing that can be done to make this world a little better place. And it's so easy. Just let this guy go home. I mean, that thing can be done very easily, and it will make the world a better place. Definitely.
I absolutely agree that, you know, this will make the world a better place, because we then don't have to fear to express ourselves anymore, possibly.
Yeah,
you know?
And we don't have this feeling of being this thought that there is actually a person there that has been held for 15 years and, you know, 13 years, you said, and you know, and and without any trial. And, you know, we're all going to feel better if we know, okay, they let him go. Thanks God, you know, it's over. Let's move on. Let's solve other problems, real problems, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they keep, obviously, lots of things occupied with this as well. And they keep journalists occupied from doing their work.
Exactly, yeah.
And this is what we need now. You know, we need, especially because of, as you say, the horrible state our world is in, we need journalists who actually let us know about this. But you have the feeling that the journalist, as you described this with the Belgrade bombing on CNN, it's like they had got a call from the White House to get told what they had to cover there, you know? When every journalist who's standing there, when they're showing this and saying, like, I mean, I saw this video of the attack on Baghdad, what is, well, available on the web as well. And I was thinking, how can you show this and present this? And this was also presented on CNN. It was almost like, you know, now, bang, and now we see how this this surprise attack on Baghdad taking place. And then you watch this, and as a human being with empathy, you think, like, what I'm just seeing here on TV, you know? What they show me? They show me how bombs are put down on a city somewhere, and this is actually true. This is not a, you know, as I mentioned before, Hollywood movie about something, and they show it like it is the most normal thing on the world, and no, it isn't, you know. No, I don't want this, and I don't want to any human being in this world suffering from this. I don't want any kid in this world have fear of that the house is bombed, that their parents dying, that they have to leave their homeland for this reason. I don't want this, that anyone has to go through this horror.
Yeah.
You know, and you saw it, and you saw this is like so emotional for me now, hearing from you that you are in America and see how Belgrade is bombed on CNN, when you know that you had on this place like a coffee with your student friends, you know?
Yeah. That's why I'm saying that the world has been pretty violent. Maybe one, you know, there can be some good things done, and one of those good things, forgive and let the people who, you know, let Julian out, or, you know, forgiveness should be one thing that should be practiced, you know. And
I think, you know, I don't know if they have to forgive him anything. I think they should be in any way, in the end of the day, grateful for what he did, because I think he prevented, even the world is in the state we are right now, but with this truth, he prevented.
Absolutely. But whoever feels in some way that was violated, or whoever feels that in some way was revealed things that, or whoever is scared that something was revealed about them or will be revealed about them, what they've done in the past, I think can, I mean, even for example, I don't know, even if you're one of those who were leading the states at that time and felt that something was published that shouldn't be, and what about just forgive and say, okay, get over it, you know, the world is moving forward and we have other problems and issues to solve, and I'm gonna give up my desire to pay him back or to punish this person for what he published, you know.
Because he is actually an example for them, for staying to his principles. You know, every politician who make like these promises before elected, which are then forgot in the moment they are elected. Yes. And for Julian, it is so that he never, you know, gone away from his principles. And as he said, my principles are not for sale, you know. So, And he stick to this, and he stick to this to the extent that he's sitting in there for all of us. And this is how I, why I feel this need, especially for us artists, to.
I think it's a great idea for you to create some kind of art exhibition in where, you know, there will be visual presentation of how artists feel about this issue, and it's good, it's great that you come up with something. When I read it, I thought that's a great idea, and I hope it helps.
Absolutely, I'm sure that we will really call more awareness to this case, and because there is so much, and from what I see from all the submissions and the different angles everybody was going into this, or the different material used, but or the different painting style used, or creating sculpture installation, even music and poetry, what we have, it's so important to show this complete group of artists coming from every direction and doing something. And this will be very important, I'm sure.
And people are there who want to contribute, and it's good for you to connect them and organize their art in an exhibition. And as you said, if you have poetry, even better, you know, because the written word is, you know, with the images. Yeah. So it's a good idea. Kudos to you.
Thank you. But it also becomes this project because of all of you who submitted their work as well, who are ready, prepared to get their name out there in connection to this case. So the one thing is the idea, and the other thing is everybody's joining now the forces, I call it. So you wrote me just now that you will go to or travel to Macedonia soon now?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm going on the beginning of June. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So do you plan then to stay a bit longer in Macedonia? Or?
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Okay. Weather will be nicer there than in Seattle.
Hope it's not too hot now that we are in Seattle. Like, okay. We're not used to hot weather now.
Yeah, but you are born in Macedonia. I think you get used to this possibly very quickly then again, you know. So.
Yeah, I think so. I'll need a few days to acclimate.
But I think where we come from, you know, we tune into this very quickly. Then, you know, our bodies say like, oh yeah, no, I'm here. It's actually my temperature. Yeah.
So hopefully, I mean, you get to go to Vukovar.
Yeah, I hope so too, that I can go to Vukovar, the hometown of my grandparents, at some point, maybe, you know, in the end of September or so this year, when I got the addresses. Which are
so you're going this year too? That's great.
I hope so, that I will be able, when the exhibition with Julian is for Julian is finished, and then I hope that afterwards I can take some time and have then the address, because what I want to do, I of course don't expect, because of what was happened while the Yugoslavian war, and I know that Vukovar was bombed to the grounds. And so I was prepared by an organization who looking or helping people who have actually had their grandparents living after the Second World War or before in Vukovar, find these addresses. But they prepared me for the fact that I possibly will not see the actual house because it is possibly gone.
Wow.
Or there is something, some rest of it. So, I mean, seeing the house where my grandmother was born and my grandfather, I don't know if this will be possible, but the street and, you know, the place so that I can walk the way along, as my grandmother described it, when she woke up in the morning as a little girl and was running down to the Donau and had to swim. So I want to walk this street. This is what I really want to do.
Yeah.
And have an ice cream, as she always said. And one day we will have an ice cream in Vukovar. I mean, this was actually for me also, as you described this, how you came then to WikiLeaks, but this was part of my looking into this story, and because it didn't add up to me with what my grandmother told me, how the people in Yugoslavia are living together or was living together, when they hadn't had to go because of a genocide what is not really public, still on, you know, put under the carpet in many occasions because of their where they originally come from. But it didn't add up to me when I heard that she was swimming over the Donau to play with her Serbian friends, you know? It's like, and then they create a story that from one day to the other, the Serbian and the Croatian people hate each other. I mean, where this came from, you know? And well, that's why it is so important that we have outlets like WikiLeaks to be able to find out the truth and who put this rumors out and who staged it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We need more more ways we need to find more ways to understand each other and to connect so we are less manipulated and we are less, we are given a chance to choose, right? I mean, isn't democracy about people choosing?
Yeah.
And so, but without knowledge of what's going on or without knowing the other person, you cannot choose, you know? And things being hidden from us and all that is hidden for us is just hidden just so we can be manipulated.
Absolutely. You are so right. And it was a very interesting talk to you, dear Elena. And
thank you.
I can only say thank you so much again for submitting your work for this exhibition and being part of this group of international artists who raise their voice, who make a stand for truth. And everybody who likes to see Elena's painting, the exhibition opens on the 2nd of July in Leipzig. All the information you find in the show notes. Thank you so much, Elena.
Thank you, Manya. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to share my painting with other people, and thank you for this hour. And I learned from you, especially about the story about Vukovar. I didn't know, and I'm gonna Google and find out more about the, you know, the history of the German population living there. That's kind of very interesting to hear.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your story as well. And I mean, somehow we have common roots, you know, what is very interesting. You know?
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah.
Because I mean, as you said to me before, it is, you know, where you are born, you know, you don't lose this if you have no German blood in you or whatsoever, but you... My grandmother would consider herself always a Croatian woman, you know.
Yeah. Well, say hello to your grandmother.
Yeah, unfortunately, she's not with us anymore.
Oh, you said you're going to bring some grandparent there, didn't you say?
Yeah, but I meant it like, you know, we'll take a picture of her with me or something, okay. You know.
Well,
but
Okay.
No, it's all right. It's many years ago she's gone, so... But anyway, I will fulfill this wish, you know, what she always had. So I have the ice cream, or then I have two ice creams for her.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Elena, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we will get the podcast ready, and I'll let you know as soon as we are online.
All right. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
You have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
Hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of Persona Non Filtered. Links and details in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to The Resistance of Art on Substack.